Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event. Fight fans worldwide, you've tuned into the number one undisputed boxing podcast today. This is the Boxing Breakdown. Now, your heavy-handed, hard-hitting host, Mark Roxy.
What's up? Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of the Boxing Breakdown. I am your host, Mr. Mark Roxy, and I am with my partner in crime here, Mr. Harold Hunt. What's up, Harold?
What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm good, brother. I am good. I am excited to be with you, man. I'm excited to chop up some boxing tonight. We got some good action here, and we are going to get right into that, okay? We're going to basically chop up the Saul Canelo Alvarez versus Gennady Golovkin fight. We are going to recap that and talk a little bit about how that fight went, how the pay-per-views went, and whether or not you think you paid too much money for it or not. And then we'll get into Terrence Crawford versus Errol Spence. And, you know, one of the main questions I've got about that fight, Harold, is whether or not Spence can take the pressure from Crawford or Crawford can take the pressure from Spence. So we're going to talk about that. And then we're going to get into a little bit of breaking news, people. You will have to wait a little bit for the breaking news about what is up, what's up with Tank Davis. So we're going to get into that. And then we're going to round out the program with a little bit of upcoming boxing schedule. We're going to give that to you. And then we're going to be out for the evening. So without further ado, Harold, my man, my brother, my partner in crime, let's talk some boxing, okay? So let's get into this fight. Canelo Alvarez versus Gennady Golovkin. The fight took place this past weekend at the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. And it was for the IBF, WBA, WBC, and WBO world super middleweight title, and it went 12 rounds. It did do that, and you know, it was an interesting fight. I have to say at the top of the program, right, you know, it was exactly how you said it was gonna be, Harold. So, you know, like, I have to eat some humble pie here because we talked about this fight and I was really, really hoping that Gennady Golovkin would deliver the goods and would have gone to the videotape and taken some much needed notes from the Bivol fight. But apparently it didn't happen. Apparently he didn't take any of the notes from the Bivol fight and he just went in there and did whatever he does. I don't know what he does. I mean, it wasn't. What he does is not what he did in the last fight. And it certainly wasn't what he did on his way up. So definitely a degradation in his skill sets. You know, I mean, the fans had the score 116 to 112, the majority of the fans. Dave Moretti had the score 116-112. Steve Weisfeld, your brother, had it 115-113. And David Sutherland had it 115-113. So, you know, two of the judges had it a little bit closer, but still, tell me what you think, Harold.
Well, as I said all along, I didn't really think it would be any fireworks. I really felt like Canelo was going to win the fight. The fight didn't really interest me, even when I was watching it. It was kind of a one-sided let's shake hands. Let's get through this. We can fight a little bit, but we're not necessarily going to try to take each other out. And we're just going to ride it out.
Right.
And as they rode out, it wasn't necessarily, you know, an attractive fight at all. So Canelo showed a little wear, and of course, Triple G showed a lot of wear.
Right.
He had one round, ninth round, where he tried to do a little something, but, you know, every dog has opportunity to have, you know, some kind of success. So his was a couple rounds, I would believe, and that was it. Canelo just was content to have an easy situation going on. He got hit a few times, but it was nothing that was, you know, monumental.
Right.
So I believe his next fight, he'll be more lined up. But the pay-per-view numbers are what is being taken to heart the most. Just to break even, they needed 600,000 buys. Mm. Just to break even on all the costs and everything, they only got 575. Caleb Plant and Canelo got 800,000 buys.
Wait a minute.
See a disparity between the two.
Okay, let's rewind. Let's go back a second. So, you know, first of all, let's touch on the scorecard, Harold. Scorecard, I mean...
You know, I love money. My bad.
I mean, I think that, you know, Gennady Golovkin only won 3 of the 12 rounds, right? He only won 3 of the 12 rounds. Let's see. Yeah, I mean... Yeah, man, it was really not. I mean, some of the scores were all over the place. Actually, when you look at the scores, like Dave Moretti had Canelo winning every round with the exception of the ninth round. With the exception of the sixth round, the eighth round, the 10th round, and the 12th round. So, except for those rounds, I mean, you know. Golovkin wasn't really to do much in the fight. And so I don't know, breaking down these scores, I was going into the scores, man. They were kind of all over the map, but Gennady Golovkin really didn't have a chance in the fight. It was really an amazing payday for him, for sure. I mean, anytime you get in the ring with Canelo Alvarez, if you're fortunate enough to be on the B side of a fight like that, you are going to make a lot of money. So I'm sure Triple G is happy. Do you have any idea of where you think Triple G might go after this?
Well, he's still undefeated. I mean, he's still a champion at his weight class. He moved up to fight Canelo. So he still retains his titles.
Right.
At middleweight. So he has Jermaine Charlo he can fight to unify. And he has another opportunity to unify because he only has 2 of the belts.
Right.
3 of the belts. So he's in great company as far as if he wants to continue to fight.
Right.
He still will be marketable. He's still a champion in his weight class. And he can make a good fight with Jermaine, with Charlo. So his opportunities still are there.
Right.
Whether or not he can still physically do it after this performance has yet to be seen.
Right. Well, listen, according to DAZN, they just came out and said that they did one. Let me see. What is this? It's bear with me. Yeah, they did 1.6 million buys.
Well, the early results that I saw was break even was 600. They did 575, and Caleb Plant and Canelo did 800.
Well, so, no, DAZN is confirming, Harold. DAZN has already come out and confirmed that they did 1.6 million buys.
Okay.
Globally. Okay. So those numbers are really good. I mean, they shatter the Plant fight for sure.
Yes.
You know, I mean, so one point that, I mean, that's a lot of buys, man.
Well, initially, maybe those numbers were the first numbers that were ramped up and were put out to the public because I saw that in print. But
yeah.
Obviously, it's been added to and further updated. And those numbers are what they are now.
Right.
So if that being the case, it was a success.
Right. Yeah. No, it was definitely. DAZN saw tremendous growth across its commercial premise partners, including a 71% across the bar restaurant, casinos, and cinemas compared to Canelo's last fight against Demetrius Bivol in May. Right? This includes the fans all across the nation coming together to watch live in 680 plus cinemas in the United States alone. The engagement records were set on social media as well to include like the TikTok fight night content that was the highest performing of any DAZN boxing event in history. Harold, they did $7.9 million or million views, not million dollars. Excuse me, 7.9 million views. What do you think about that?
Well, I'm really impressed because I know some numbers they put out may be contrived or they may be guessing or whatever. And people like you and myself who read everything and call our people who are actually in the industry.
Yeah.
And when your numbers are supplanted by some other numbers, you know, you have to understand that the media is going to put out whatever you need to put out. So those are numbers I saw, but that is great. So with that being said, it was a success. Both of them still retain their markability when they do fight again. So that's great.
Yeah. You know what they're counting though? I think I'm pretty sure what they're counting is they're counting the pay-per-view buys along with the DAZN subscriptions. So they're bundling all the subscriptions and they're counting those. And then on top of it, they're putting the pay-per-view numbers in as well. So that's how they get to the $1.6 million. So to your point, you know, what are the numbers for just the buys? And you know, what just
buys.
Yeah, that may be, you may be pretty accurate on that, that the pay-per-view buys were a lot less than the Caleb Plant one. If you just, I mean, if you just go on the pay-per-views, maybe that's the case. Maybe they're half of that.
Well, as I said, you know, when those numbers come out, they were strictly, they were saying pay-per-view. They right. didn't roll up the back end or any other numbers that could be used to inflate that to, you know, give a estimation of how much it really did.
Yeah.
But the pay-per-view views are the ones that matter. In my, they all matter, but this matters how many people actually paid that money.
Right, right.
To view it.
Yeah, man, for sure. Harold, my question is, so we talked a little bit about Gennady Golovkin, Triple G, where he might go. Gennady, that's how you're supposed to say his name, Gennady Golovkin. But, you know, the mm-hmm. other thing is, what happens to Canelo? Because, I mean, I've heard some rumors that Demetrius Bivol could face Canelo at 168 for the undisputed title.
Well, we know Canelo hurt his wrist in the fight with Caleb Plant. The same, you know, a hand he uses to throw his body shots. So he'll have surgery and he'll be out a year.
Right.
So within that year, you have to see how the rest of the situation shakes out. He's not under any threat to be stripped from his titles or anything like that. So when he does come back, it'll be, an undisputed title fight, of course.
Right.
But right now, he can kind of sit back, use the opportunity to, you know, just see what the landscape is going to present to him, heal up, and come back with a vengeance. So who he's going to fight, it would be great if it could be Benavidez. It would be great. Or he'll come back and fight Bivol. We don't know which way he's going to go with it, but those are two prime opportunities he'll have.
Well, you know, he did say at the press conference that the post press conference that he was not afraid to fight anybody. That this is Canelo. Saul Canelo Alvarez came out and said, you know, I'm not really afraid to fight anybody. And there's a lot of, you know, the media, the mainstream media that's talking about me being afraid to fight another Mexican or how I won't fight another Mexican for whatever the reason is. And, you know, he came out and he said, look, it's not about fighting another Mexican. You know, it's, I'm not afraid to fight anybody, you know, it's a sport and he's a countryman. And so that's kind of where I stand on it. But if I have to fight him, I'll fight him. That's kind of what he said. Am I, you know, did you get that?
Yeah, he's getting a lot of flack for saying something like that, like he doesn't want to fight his own countrymen. And the argument that I've heard was he doesn't want to take the shine from them.
Right.
You know, they worked hard to get where they are, and a defeat to him would kind of relegate them to just average type guys or just someone on Canelo's hit list. And he's trying to allow them to have their own shine and accolades without him beating them or them or, you know, possibly them beating him.
So right.
I can kind of understand his thought process on that.
Yeah, no, I get it too, man. So Harold, man, the fight was great. I mean, Canelo definitely did his thing. You know, he controlled the pace of the fight. He controlled the action in the fight. And, you know, he was just sticking Golovkin with hooks and jabs and straight right hands. And, you know, Golovkin, fought the majority of the fight from the outside and just kind of, you know, slid into a payday. I mean, I don't want to minimize what he did, but certainly he did not get hurt. The interesting thing about that fight is, you know, and I'm just going to say this as a trainer, you know, if you look at the way in which Gennady Golovkin fought, that's a difference. And we talk about this all the time in the gym, you know, the difference between losing a fight and getting your asparagus kicked, right? There's a difference between getting your asparagus kicked and losing a fight. There's a big difference. And so when you look at that fight, you could see how, you know, Triple G got the triple gold without getting his butt, you know, served. So, I mean, that is an interesting thing. If you're a fighter out there, you know, I would go back and I'd watch that fight and I'd really pay attention to how Gennady Golovkin managed to get the biggest payday. I'm pretty sure it's the biggest payday of his life. It have to be.
Yes, as I said earlier, when you first asked me a question, they had a unwritten handshake rule between the two of them.
Wow.
We're going to fight, but we're not going to try to knock each other out.
Wow.
We'll have some moments, but we're not going to do that. And that's exactly what it was. I mean, at the end, neither one of them were really touched too much.
Right.
A few, but they went into that thing to be as equitable.
Damn,
and cautious. Like, as possible. So therefore it did not interest me. It was very hard for me to watch it.
Yeah. It would be.
I was looking for so many other things, a body language, watching the corners. I needed something because the action between them two was already a foregone conclusion in round one for me.
Right. Well, there's some talk about Canelo gassing after the eighth round. Is that something you picked up?
Not necessarily gassing. It's just that he just got bored because he wasn't going to try to take him out. And G said, I'm not going to try to take you out. So Triple G tried to kind of turn the tables a little bit
right. And
become aggressive in the ninth round, which kind of surprised Canelo. He said, hey, I thought we had a deal here. What are you doing?
Right.
And so that was his only kind of opportunity.
Right. But
previous to that, you know,
yeah,
they were going along just fine until Triple G decided he wanted to change the narrative for that one round.
Well, interestingly enough, Harold, Steve Weisfeld gave Gennady Golovkin all three of the last rounds. And he gave him round number eight and number one. So Steve Weisfeld gave Gennady Golovkin round one, round eight, round 10, 11, and 12. Right? So interesting.
Well, I agree with his scorecard. I can see that. I can see Moretti's scorecard. I mean, all of it is objective, where you're sitting, what you see, what you feel, what you experience. So,
Right. Doing
what I do, I can understand how you see different opportunities
for
scoring, and you will notate them as such,
depending
on where you are. So they were all good scores to me.
Right. Well, you know, speaking of good scores, right? Let's talk about two of the most scoring fighters in the sport, okay? So you've got Terrence Crawford and Errol Spence. It's quite possibly one of the biggest fights of a year, if not the biggest fight of the year. And this fight is scheduled. Harold, when is the date of that fight? Tell the fans.
Supposedly, what, November? The date is escapes me because they were golfing on so many dates.
All right. It's got to be in December. I thought it was December, like December 13th. If you're tuning in and you're listening,
it was in November. It's a Thanksgiving fight. It's splashed all over media, but I don't quite remember. I remember I said it was
right.
It's there. They have a date.
Okay.
But
let's see. I'll try to
see. As far as the largeness of the fight, they need at least 60 days to do the proper marketing.
Right.
So, and that's a proper time frame you would need. So it's going to work out nicely as far as the press conference is concerned. Everyone's going to be lined up to do all the different cities and touring and all that. So it's going to get the full marketing treatment.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm still digging here trying to see if I can find when that fight is supposed to happen. So that's really important to me for this, for the podcast, to know when that fight is happening. But anyway, this, Harold, is going to be a huge fight. So let's talk about this. Do you think Errol Spence is going to apply significant pressure to Terrence Crawford? For example, pressure he hasn't seen before?
Well, this is what I see. He's going to apply the pressure. He's going to do what he does. He is really defensively responsible. If he comes into you, he's going to try to keep himself unhit and hit you. And he's always going to be relentless with that. What I see from Crawford is he can handle anything like that coming toward him and still score. He can fight off the back foot. If he needs to stand in the pocket, he can fight in the pocket. Right. If he needs to fight on angles, he can fight on angles. If he can fight on the inside or the outside or any obscure angle needed to score, he can do that.
Yeah.
So just preliminarily, I see Crawford using Spence's attributes, his come forward, his boxing ability, his aggressiveness to be opportunity for him to score. I see the fight going the distance, and I see Crawford winning on points.
Right. Well, that's interesting. I mean, I'm not after your last picks. I mean, you did pick the Triple G Canelo fight pretty accurately. So, I mean, folks out there, if you're tuning in, man, give us your opinion on whether or not you think Terrence Crawford will come out victorious against Errol Spence, or you think Errol Spence will win. I mean, what do you think? The fight.
Just to further my point, Errol, yes, is the bigger man. There's no doubt about that. And if he gets the opportunity to use that bulk in a way that he can, make hay, he'll do that. But yeah. I don't think you'll have the opportunity because Crawford will get out the way and leave a little something with you for the judges to see as he gets out the way.
Right. Well, so according to my sources here, Terrence Crawford and Errol Spence, they have agreed on pretty much all the material terms for the fight for the 147 undisputed championship, although the contract has actually not been signed, according to this. I'm trying to see the date of this source. So, the date of this article, and sometimes, they don't actually put the date of the article. They just put the darn article up. And so you kind of wonder sometimes, like, when did they release this? But they're saying that the fight has not actually been made. They're targeting November 19th in Las Vegas.
Okay.
All right. That's what I've got here, that fight is targeted. So Crawford, 38-0 with 29 knockouts, who's actually promoted by Bob Arum and Top Rank Incorporated, versus Spence, who's 28-0 with 22 KOs, who's actually one of the Al Heyman's fighters from the Premier Boxing Champion. So, this is...
I beg your pardon, Mark.
Yep.
Crawford is no longer under the banner of Bob.
Really?
Yes, you remember he released himself. That was his last fight.
So that's what I'm saying. So I'm reading this source right here. These guys are like, you know, you people got to get your act together so we can deliver the news properly. So tell me more about this, Harold.
Okay, as you know, well, the sources have been for the past several months. Of course, Crawford has Bob Arum in court suing him for breach of contract, this, that, and the other, and that's an ongoing case. He has since left Top Rank, and that's why this fight is actually going on. And Arum has no say-so or any kind of comment on it because he's no longer working with Bud.
Right.
That being the case, that's why it's getting made. I feel that the opportunity to release a date and all that has kind of been kind of held back just because they want to, you know, heighten the anticipation. And I think it's a well-placed move. We don't know when it's going to happen. We know they agreed in principle for everything. And they just have to kind of clean up the paperwork. The article I read, different articles I read, and then the people I've talked to, it's just a matter of just agreeing on everything. Now, the split is 60-40 on this fight. Whoever wins, it flips back the other way.
Right.
And then if there's a third fight, the split is even larger to the winner.
Man, so you know what's interesting to me, Harold? Why is it that every time these mega fighters negotiate a deal, they're always thinking about three fights? Why is that? Why do they just assume that the buying public is going to actually want to see three of the fights? Like in the case of Gennady Golovkin, man, like who wants, and Canelo, like, I wanted to see the fight. I wanted to see a real fight. I didn't want to see a gentleman's handshake of not knocking each other out. I mean, the casual fan doesn't want to know about that. They want to see a real fight, man. And the thing is that why is it that these guys always, you know, go forward and plan three fights? They're already talking about the third fight in the contract. It's just, I don't know. It seems kind of, tell me about that, Harold.
Well, you have to maximize the opportunity to make money, obviously. And if I'm going to lose a fight, I want a chance to win it back. And then if I can do a thriller in Manila, if I can do a third fight, if I can do something that's going to cause our trilogy to go down in history as one of the best fights of all time, that type of thing. But I think initially the fighters, they just want to win the first fight. And then they can not decide, but if it's signed for a rematch, that's fine.
Right.
So a decision win either way, the public will, yes, they'll want to see a second fight.
Right.
A decision to win on the next fight, the public will want to see a third fight. So the public is going to want to see these three fights. Now, if the run-up is as spectacular as it should be and the action in the ring is actually what it needs to be, three fights will be consumed by the consumers and they will love it.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, on Twitter, I get this one thing coming across the feed. It says, Crawford, has agreed to all the financial terms, from Al Haymon, including the short end of a revenue split, So he's going to get the short side of the revenue split.
Right.
Package includes a bilateral rematch clause. The winner will earn the majority of the revenue for the return bout if it is to happen. So, and another material piece of this is that the attorneys are saying that while they've worked out all the verbal details of the finances, they haven't come up with the correct language in the contract. So you and I know when these attorneys get involved in this stuff, you know, something that's really good that's coming up on November 19th, could easily go in the wrong direction. It won't take much for that to go in the wrong direction.
Well, I think differently about that. It's usually come down to money. Will the fighter accept the cut that's offered to him? Yes or no? Mm. If he accepted the short end of it, that's half the battle. The rest of it is just wordage, small little battles that really don't mean anything.
Right.
Because the bottom line is, this is how much you're going to get paid.
Yeah.
This is how much I'm going to get paid. And if, in fact, we have to do it again, the winner will get paid this. So right here and right now, I feel 100% the fight will happen. You just got to go through, that paperwork and this, that, and the other. Who has a better set of lawyers, this and that. You know, they got their own little back and forth. Who's more astute with the paperwork?
Right.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
The fight will happen. I truly believe, you know, however it's going to go, it's going to happen. Anytime, in just my opinion, when the money is accepted at whatever percentage, the fight usually goes on. He's not going to change and say, I want more money. He said, I'll take the short end of the stick. I want the opportunity.
Right.
As Haney did.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I can see that. I mean, so let's talk about attributes. Let's talk about skill attributes, Harold. What do you think the rangy Terrence Crawford is going to be able to do against Errol Spence?
Well, as I said earlier, just because he can fight on angles, he can fight going forward, he can fight going backwards. He does leave himself to be open to be hit at times, but he uses that as an opportunity to score.
Right.
So I just see him really moving well, fighting well, and showing all of those skills he has. Now, of course, you know, the mental mindset is very daunting, and that's where a lot of fighters get their motivation from. I mean, you know, just to give a quick example, we know Jordan, his motivation came from he wanted to please his father. His father liked the other son better.
Right.
So he took that motivation his whole life and became what he became. We understand LeBron, his was a survival in this world. His ball playing was survival. I got to take care of my mom. I got to survive. I got to eat. I got to live. His came from that. As far as Errol Spence is concerned, he grew up middle class. He didn't necessarily have any kind of hardships or whatever.
Right.
His hardships came from, you know, the accident and the retina type of thing, where his situation is I'm fighting for survival, I'm fighting for my physical survival. Whereas Bud, he has the street mentality.
Right.
And that is kill or be killed.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And because of that culture, being in, you know, affiliations, I'm not disparaging any of them, but you learn certain things on how to apply in your life. And I believe that Crawford has a little different motivation because of where he came from, what he had to deal with. You know, he got shot. They shot at him. The class saved his life. You know, otherwise he would have been killed and this, that, and the other. So he has a lot different motivation, where Spence is like, hey, look how I have survived this trauma to my body twice. So, my motivation is different. I think the survival motivation to live is greater than the other.
Right.
Crawford's motivation to me is more paramount than Spence's.
Right. So let's look at this. Let's look at this on paper. If I can recall, so you've got Terrence Crawford, Harold. Yeah, man. Terrence Crawford, basically his last six fights, from the one that is the furthest away to the newest one, we've got Jeff Horn, Jose Benavidez Jr., Amir Khan, Eglidas Kavalauskas, Kell Brook, and Sean Porter. All of those last six fights have been wins with a TKO. All of the last six fights. Okay, hear me, y'all. Y'all listening in onto the Boxing Breakdown. The last six fights for Terrence Crawford have all been KOs. And you could actually go back further, but I'm not going to do that because I want to compare. Then you have in the last six fights, Lamont Peterson this is for Errol Spence now, folks. Lamont Peterson, followed by Carlos Ocampo, Mikey Garcia, Sean Porter, Danny Garcia, and Yordanis Ugas. Okay. And so if you go back to Lamont Peterson, it was an RTD win, followed by followed by a KO, followed by a unanimous decision, followed by a split decision win with Sean Porter, followed by a unanimous decision win with Danny Garcia, followed by a TKO with Yordynis Ugas. So, I mean, on paper, folks, it appears to me that the opposition that the two have fought are equal in skill sets. But where there's a difference, at least from looking at it on paper, I see that Terrence Bud Crawford has successfully slept the last six of his opponents. Whereas, you know, you could not say the same thing for Errol Spence. So interesting. I wonder what you think. Errol, what do you think about those stats?
Well, the stats look good. You're absolutely right. The common opponent is what I hang my hat on, which is Sean Porter. And if you look at how each of those guys handle Sean Porter, then you can draw a conclusion. Because I can't decipher and put together all the other opponents. I've seen all the other fights, and my mind is just still sticking to the common opponent. And he was able to put Sean Porter in a position where Sean knew he didn't have what it takes to win the fight. He did everything he needed to do, and he was just not sharp enough. He simply took away Sean Porter's opportunity to win the fight, period.
Yeah.
Whereas when Sean fought Errol, his opportunity to win was never taken away. Right. He lost the fight, but his opportunity was not taken away.
Right.
And that is the factor that leads me to feel like Crawford has a way of taking away what you do and then turning you off.
Yeah, man. Because
whereas Spence will beat you down, but he won't take away
right
what you have.
Yeah. It's a different style of fighting for sure. I mean, when you look at Sean Porter's last outing against Terrence Crawford, this is what the results were. So the scores, first of all, the fight was stopped in the 10th round, 10 of 12. and it was stopped. At that point, the scores were 87-84. 86-85 and 86-85. So it wasn't altogether a horrible performance by Sean Porter. He just got stopped. And then if you go over to when Errol Spence fought Sean Porter, right? You have the scores were 116 to 111, 112 to 115. That's an odd score. That was Larry Hazard's junior score, 112 to 115. I'm not sure how he got those scores. And then Steve Weisfeld got it 116 to 111. So it, you know, the two of the judges had it remarkably in favor of Errol Spence. I mean, that's, and it was a 12 round fight, of course, because it was a title fight, but there you have it. So I don't know, just sharing that. I mean, it's up to you guys listening in. I got a comment here. I'm going to post this comment because I got a comment from Gladys Rogers, right? And so Gladys Rogers basically says Errol Spence will not want a second or third fight if he makes it through the first. And I hope he does. Gladys, first of all, thank you, Gladys Rogers, for making your comment, posting it in here. And yeah, so it sounds like you, Gladys, don't think that Errol Spence is going to make it out. But if he does, you think he doesn't want another fight. He don't want any more of that smoke. That's what you're really trying to say, right, Gladys? So thank you for your comment. Harold, what do you think? What do you think about what Gladys said?
Yeah, that's a good comment. I can understand where she's coming from, how she feels about that. That makes a lot of sense. One thing that's going to supersede that is the contract itself is going to ask for a rematch. So, right. Yes, maybe mentally, if he's beaten, of course he doesn't want to go back in there and take another loss or another beating or whatever.
Right.
The contract's going to stipulate that he has to. If he can go into the second fight with a different mindset, yes, I agree with that. But you know, on the outside, as far as, you know, her and I, we're all really fans, really. That's what we want to see. But contractually, there's going to be a second fight.
Well, we're going to see. I mean, you know, again, I think it's interesting that Gladys doesn't think that he'll want that second fight or the third fight. But, you know, I mean, you got to have a second fight because, you know, whoever wins, the other one's going to want another crack at it if it's possible, unless, you know, I mean, look at Terrence Crawford. He's taking less money. So if in fact, we'll see soon enough when the contract is finalized, but if he does take less money than Errol Spence, then you got to know it's because he believes he's going to sleep Errol Spence. So, I mean, thoughts?
Not necessarily sleep him. He just feels like that he can win the fight. He feels like he can win the fight.
Who feels like he can win the fight?
Crawford feels he can win the fight. He feels his style is going to be applied properly that he'll be the winner of the fight.
Yo.
He just sees so many opportunities for him to not be affected too much by Errol Spence's style. And he thinks his style will prevail. And, you know, as you saw, as you just said, 6 KOs. He takes it away from you, then he takes you out. Spence doesn't take it away from you. Spence didn't take it away from Ugas. He beat him up, but he didn't take away his aggression.
Yo.
He didn't take away what he was doing.
Harold, listen, Terrence Crawford has slept the last 19 yes. of his 20 victims. I mean, the guy's got 29 KOs. Not many guys since 2012, 11, let's see, 11, oh snap, 11, 10. My gosh, he's smoking everybody. Going all the way back to 2008, his pro debut, he smoked that guy with a KO. And he's just been smoking them left and right. You know, I mean, let's see if there's anyone he didn't smoke or who he didn't smoke. I mean, y'all know you're listening in to the Boxing Breakdown. Thank you for tuning in. And thank you for watching us on Apple Podcasts or listening to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. And thank you for tuning in on YouTube. But like, if you know, like what fight was similar to this fight with Errol Spence, Terrence Crawford, who would Terrence Crawford have to face in his past that would inform Errol Spence how to win?
I would say Kavalauskas. Supposedly he suffered his first knockdown that wasn't counted as such against Kavalauskas. If you look at that footage where he was hurt, where it appeared that Rudd was hurt.
Yeah.
That's because he was engaging with him in the center of the ring. And he was in the pocket with him and he was not responsible defensively and he got hit.
All right.
There's no doubt about that. Okay. Now, that was so many fights ago, and that mistake or that tendency has not shown itself in the past 4 or 5 fights. So that was a correction. That's not going to reappear because he obviously saw that, and he has corrected that to the point where it's second nature for him not to put himself in that position.
Right.
So just with that discipline right there, I see him being able to navigate and circumvent anything Earl's going to do. And as I said earlier in my conversation, he's going to use Earl's aggression right. and his come forwardness against him, and he's going to score, and he's going to win.
Yeah, man. I mean, I like I said, I do not disagree with you on this one. It's hard to say because, you know, there's still time. I'd love to see them both training and working. And once we get a chance to get a glimpse of where they are, and their skill sets, it'll inform us as to who's really going to come out on top. But, you know, like Crawford's been very active. I mean, you know, he fought in 2001, in November of 2001. So it's not like, you know, and then let's see, Errol Spence, his last fight was actually in February, March, April, May, in May of 2022. So Errol Spence has been a little bit more active. But, you know, they kind of been like teeter-tottering with each other. Like one fights and then the other fights and then the other fights and then the other fights. They've been building this sucker up for a long time.
If you could be a little more technical about it, you know, on a level that, of course, is your discipline, I'm sure you can speak to the audience about this. But Earl being a true southpaw, but Crawford being both an expert at both, I necessarily haven't seen Earl switch. I've seen him stay in his stance the entire way. I've seen Crawford switch either way and been effective either way. And that, in my mind, is an advantage because he'll simply turn into the southpaw killer by, you know, using those techniques. So that's an advantage I have to believe I see.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up a really interesting point, Harold. And, you know, what I want to just touch on is what you just said about, you know, one being a southpaw and a switcher, which is Terrence Crawford, and Errol Spence being a conventional, like a real southpaw, real southpaw, you know, double jabbing, sliding over to the right, sticking the left hand at the body, walking off, jabbing, stabbing. Like he actually is a quintessential southpaw, but he also is a come forward fighter. If he gets you on your back leg, moving back, that fight is his, you know. Terrence Crawford, the fact that he can switch, I don't know that that's too much of an issue technically for Errol Spence because he's faced both southpaw and conventional fighters throughout his career. He just has to be smart enough, you know, not to get behind Terrence Crawford when he, you know, when Terrence Crawford is switching, if you understand what I mean. Like Terrence Crawford, if he switches at a time that's inconvenient for the southpaw, it could be dangerous. So balance is going to be a real important thing. And also making sure that Errol Spence keeps Crawford right where he can see him in front of him. And those switches aren't happening in the heated exchanges. I think that could be a problem for Errol Spence. But here's the thing that gets me. Errol Spence is not, he can knock you out. There's no doubt. His body punching is, you know, second to none. He's got great body shots. He's a great body puncher. His hook is in the box. He's solid. He's a solid fighter. But, you know, I think the fact that Terrence Crawford has the power up in the front, right? Right? He's got that left hook and the power up in the front of his body. That could be, you know, that could spell disaster for the southpaw because we don't like that. We don't like that. Okay.
The switch hitting creates the angles, and angles is how you score on someone coming forward. They're coming forward, but you catch them at angles. Yeah. And because he can switch on either side, he's going to have angles on either side of Spence as he's coming in with his work.
Yeah.
So it's just going to be wide open if he's on point that night and uses angles and his footwork. And, you know, you can run in on something because Bud's got a little power.
Right.
You know, I mean, a lot of power.
Yeah.
Rather, I should say that.
Yeah, man. No, I think you're right. And we're gonna get deeper into this fight. Once this fight is announced, you know, I mean, as I said, it's hard to find, you know, you get today in mainstream media, there's so much information that's coming out about boxing. Some of it's true. Some of it's like recreated. We don't really always know if what we're reading is a true good source. You know, there are trusted sources. There are people in the industry that we can go to get facts. But sometimes, you know, we do this podcast once a week and sometimes we report on something and that tends to be like, you know, in a week from now, that fact is no longer a fact. It's actually fiction. And it happens and it's interesting. And if you listen to the program, you know, there are times where, you know, we report on a fight that's going to happen and then we find out 2 weeks later that it's not going to happen. It happens. It always happens. You know, it happened when Teofimo was going to fight. I mean, it happened with Ryan Garcia. It happened with Tank Davis. I mean, we've reported on this stuff for years and so you can kind of see the pattern of how it works, but enough about that. Let's get into another pattern. Okay. Let's get into a pattern. I'm going to switch gears here, Harold, okay? If that's okay with you. I want to talk a little bit about what is up with Tank Davis, man.
Well, as you know, in 2020, Tank was in a situation where he wrecked his car. He then fled the scene and left the car there. And the people that were in the car, whose car was total, he left the scene of accident. And that is a situation, a crime, if you will.
Yeah.
So he definitely had a hearing today. He wanted to plead deal where there was no jail time. However, there was four victims, and three of the victims have already taken the money.
Wow.
The third victim, who was a female who was pregnant at the time. Oof. She is continuing on with this. Therefore, she's not taking the money. She wants him to go to trial on this.
Wow.
So that's what's happening with that. Supposedly, you all can read this. At the accident, she was asked him to help her get out of the car. Supposedly, you know, he declined and he picked up his items and he left. So that may not be the necessarily thing that a jury or a judge wants to hear. So we have to see how it will play out, how the lawyers can possibly get someone to get off without any jail time because of this. So it is in his hometown. He is a favorite son. I mean, I've seen situations where famous people, they go to jail, but they're off on the weekends. They literally can leave the jail on Friday night and come back Monday morning.
Really?
Just because of their celebrity and their posture in the society and, you know, this type of thing. So you don't know what niceties are going to be afforded to him or not. Or he may get, you know, who knows? He may get house arrest. We don't know what's going to happen with that. But the fourth person refused to take the money.
Wow.
And they want to go to trial.
Wow. That's amazing. So yeah.
He's out a year at least. The rest of this year. No, he's out the rest of this year. The trial's in December. And it'd be like a 2-day trial and then we'll go from there. But he's not fighting anymore this year.
Wow. Listen, that is, first of all, that is shocking news. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you know, not to see Gervonta Davis in the ring is, you know, that is a tragedy, man. That is unbelievable news. And, you know, while I understand, I don't know why, you know, he allegedly left the scene when the purported person who was injured was in the car and begging for help, and he just left the scene is what the reports say. I don't know if that's true or not. You know, I certainly don't want to report news. The trial hasn't happened. I'm sure that when they knew who it was, you know, I mean, gosh, you know, I don't know. I don't know what to say except that, you know, I'm sure this is a big money suit, you know?
Well, it kind of, if you look at how what happened with Floyd, just to say, the state of Nevada stands to lose so much money if he didn't fight.
Oh my gosh, right? If he didn't represent
them.
Yeah.
So they fashioned it where he still got his fight. He still made millions for the state of Nevada, yet they still got their pound of flesh, which was very brief and not, you know, so substantial.
Right.
The situation is different in Baltimore because Baltimore is not a venue for boxing. They're not counting on Tank to bring some revenue into the state. So because of that, they can really do what they want to do as far as how they want to punish him. So those two things aren't similar at all.
Right.
What I'm looking for now is to see what type of lawyers there are going to be involved. Now, you know, Al Haymon is a high powered gentleman in so many different areas.
Right.
And he should, and he will, you know, apply the proper opportunity for Tank to get off.
Wow. So how do you think that's going to go? How do you think that's going to play itself out?
Well, facts are hard to gloss over, but there are lawyers out here, man, who could get you to believe that your mama is not your mama. You know, so that is some of the skill sets some of these lawyers have.
Right.
And being that being said, we just can't say, because it's all still human situations involved. And you can discredit someone's testimony easily if you have the right, you know, skill set as a lawyer.
Right.
So there's just so many other factors that are involved. And for them to go ahead and go to trial, it could work out one way or the other. We just don't know.
Yeah.
But she wants her pound of flesh. She wants him to go.
Yeah. And the judge refused to approve the plea deal that they made. So I thought that's pretty interesting.
Well, he has some kind of history on the books as far as his conduct in society. So the judge, you know, I don't know this, you know, had to make that ruling based on his past work.
Right.
What he has done in the past. So that being the case, you know, that the judge's hands could have been somewhat tied. I just can't do this just because of this or that. I just don't know.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, it's going to be an interesting thing. I mean, the judge is it's Judge Melissa Fenn, was moved by the objection of Jair Smith, one of the four alleged victims in the November 2020 crash that led to the charges. Smith, who is also pursuing a civil case against Davis, said that the boxer refused to help her at the scene of the accident, where she said she was trapped, screaming in a smoking vehicle. "He looked me in the eye and he never came over to help," Smith said. She added that her knee was severely wounded and that she's still unable to play with her children or work normally after several rounds of physical therapy. Okay, so that, I mean, it goes on and on. I mean, you guys can read the articles yourself. I mean, it's quite, you know, I think the travesty of this thing is that, you know, we want to see Tank Davis in the ring, man. I'm not going back to 2020. About what happened, because I wasn't there. I don't know what was there, but this is like for the boxing community, who really does love to see this gentleman in the ring. I mean, if he's not going to be able to box for another year, I mean, you think there's going to be jail time?
I don't know. I can't say. Yeah. Of course, that testimony is damning, and that's something that needs to be in the, they need a gag order. Because that is going to sway the public negatively against him. And for that gag order not to be in place, for that to be
public, I know,
press for us, is not positive.
Right.
Whatever jurors that they choose have already heard this.
Right.
Woman, pregnant, trapped, all those are really heavy buzzwords.
Yeah.
The only thing I can see is she has to be, or they're going to try to discredit her in cross-examination.
Yeah.
And it has to be so successful that the jury of 12 believes that she's in a situation where she's just simply trying to get paid.
Right.
And she's still involved in the civil case.
Yeah.
So she still wants her money, but she's not vindictive. She wants justice because she believes she was, you know, so.
Right.
I can't say.
No, I mean, we're not the judge and jury, man. You're absolutely right, Harold. We are not the judge and jury. But what I can say is there was a hint. I mean, there's nothing written in stone about the Ryan Garcia fight, but that fight was a huge, huge fight, pay-per-view fight. And that fight was on the table, I know, after, you know, Tank improves his record to 27-0 back in May when he slept Rolly Romero. He slept Rolando Romero to defend his WBA lightweight championship. And there was talk that he was going to fight Ryan Garcia. But I guess now it's more, you know, I don't know, man. Well, I did want to just take a moment to say that we got a comment from Cappuccino Dadon. Errol has been active against champions, right? That's one thing he said. And then he also says Errol is going to punish Crawford. Man, where were you? Where were you? Cappuccino Dadon, where were you, bro? We were just talking about this fight, you know, about 15, 20 minutes ago. And then you come out with this, like, you know, Errol Spence is going to punish Crawford. But, and that may be true, but Cappuccino Dadon, we were talking about that before. And so anyway, yeah, I mean, if you think that Errol Spence is going to punish Crawford, how do you think he's going to do that? I want you to tell me, put it in the comments down here below. Tell me what you think, Cappuccino Dadon, how you think that's going to happen. Because, you know, on paper, it doesn't look like that's going to happen, brother.
But I can see his viewpoint. If Earl's coming forward and he is on his front foot and he's being effective with his work,
right,
and he is scoring on a regular basis and he's dictating around and he's moving Crawford around, and as Crawford leaves, you know, the scene, leaves the pocket, right, he's getting the better of the exchanges every time Crawford leaves the pocket. Yes, he'll not punish him, but he'll be able to land those punches and win on points. That's a great possibility. I see that.
Right.
It's up to Crawford how he handles that aggression. If he's the one who gets the best of the exchanges as he exits, or is Spence gets the best of the exchange. Because right, as a judge, you're looking to see who's scoring on a consistent basis. And a good judge, all judges understand that just moving backward or moving out of the pocket does not mean that you're losing, because you can easily score and do very well, you know, moving back, Mark, as you know. So
yep,
what he's saying is valid.
Yeah. Well, so listen, let's take a moment to just thank our listeners on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Make sure you give us a review, please. Share the podcast with your friends and folks in the boxing community. We're just trying to grow our podcast. The podcast, audio podcast, doing fabulous. It's doing great, great, great. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And, you know, if you're watching us on YouTube, thank you for being with us, man. We're growing slowly and steady. You know, YouTube is a difficult platform because there's so much content out there. There's so much content, but we are delivering real good boxing talk. We need you to hit the like and subscribe button down below. Come on, Harold, hit it down there below, man, and make
right
sure
there, right
that's
there.
It. Yeah, hit it. You know where it is. It's right over there. Look, boom, pop, 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 boom. There it is, right there. Hit it. Hit the like and subscribe button. Hit the notification so you know when we're coming on live. And we just love to be with you and love to talk about boxing, man. Thank you, Don. Cappuccino Don. Thank you, Gladys Rogers, for being with us. And all you guys tuning in. And I do also want to make sure that you know you can find us on Instagram as well, at The Boxing Breakdown. You can find us on Facebook at, guess what? The Boxing Breakdown. You can find us on LinkedIn at The Boxing Breakdown. And you can hear it one more time, because you can also find us on Twitter at The Boxing Breakdown. So check it out. Make sure you get on that Instagram, man. We love to have you on our Instagram. Most importantly, on YouTube. And yeah, man. So Harold, I think we're just about rounding out our hour here. And Yeah, man, it goes by so freaking fast every single time. And so here we are with our final chat out, right? We're going to talk a little bit about the boxing schedule coming up for September, the remainder of September, October, November, and we might even, we're not going to reveal December yet, but we are going to go into November. So, okay, so we have, obviously, on September 23rd, which is coming up in 2 days, we've got Stevenson and Canseco. That's on Fight TV, ESPN Plus, September 23rd at 10 p.m. We've got Parker versus Joyce on the ESPN Plus platform and BT Sports. That's on September 24th at 2 p.m. We've got the Ben versus Eubank on DAZN. That's a pay-per-view, you guys. So let's watch those numbers and see how it goes. That's October 8th at 2 p.m. And then we've got Fondura versus Campo. That's on Showtime. Showtime. October 8th at 10 p.m. And then we've got Shields versus Marshall, ESPN, Sky Sports, Fight TV, October 15th at 2 p.m. We've got Devin Haney versus George Kambosos 2 on Fight TV and ESPN Plus. That's on October 15th. Boom, boom, bow. We've got Wilder versus Helenius on Fox pay-per-view, October 15th at 9 p.m. And then, of course, Fury versus Hunter on Sky Sports, October 29th at 2 p.m. Lomachenko versus Ortiz, October 29th at 9 p.m. on ESPN Plus and Fight TV. Jojo Diaz squares off against Zapata on DAZN October 29th at 9 p.m. Bivol versus Ramirez on DAZN on November 5th at 2 p.m. And then we've got Cordina and Rahimov on DAZN on November 5th at 2 p.m. So that's your round out, man, for November. I hope you guys enjoyed the podcast. Harold, thank you for being with us. Always thank you for adding your amazing insight into the world of boxing and what's coming up, and really appreciate it. And for those of you tuning in, until next time, we'll catch you on the other side. I'm Mark Roxy with Harold Hunt. We'll see you next time. Peace and love.
Fight fans, join host Mark Roxy and special guests as they break down all aspects of the boxing world, including news, business, management, training, promotions, fan reactions, upcoming events, matchups, future boxing stars, title fights, state of the boxing world, and all the stuff you don't see when you watch boxing. This podcast is released each week on Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Live streamed on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook Live. It's the Boxing Breakdown, hosted by Mark Roxy. Thank you.